everyone. Welcome to the Board of Public Works. I hope everybody enjoyed the Labor Day weekend. Welcome back from summer vacation. We didn't really have one, I guess. But I want to begin by expressing our deepest sympathies to House Majority Whip Talmadge Branch on the tragic loss of his grandson in a shooting death in Baltimore City over the weekend. And I hope you'll join me in keeping Delegate Branch and his family in our thoughts and prayers. Also want to express our deepest sympathies to our BPW Secretary, Sheila McDonald, and her family. We were really saddened to learn of the passing of her father, Captain Ewing Mickey McDonald. Captain McDonald was a proud graduate of the Naval Academy, and he served our country in Korea and in Vietnam. And Sheila, I know how proud you are of his service in the Navy, and I'm sure that your dad was really proud of the tremendous service that you give to the state. And we're very sorry for your family's loss as well.
Thank you.
At this point, I'll turn the floor over to my colleagues for any opening comments that they may have. Madam Treasurer.
Thank you, Governor. First of all, I want to echo both to Sheila and Talmadge and his family. The comptroller and I served with Talmadge on appropriations, and so when you're close to somebody like that, this sort of horrible thing hits even harder. Shouldn't happen to anyone, but once it comes really close to home, you realize what a terrible thing this is. And I think we would be remiss to let the day go by without mentioning Houston and the hurricane, which was another terrible natural event, but one that really brought out the best in a lot of people. And I, for one, was very impressed by all the volunteers and the community spirit. And now I know people are watching our East Coast and Irma coming and just hoping that it doesn't wreak the sort of harm that we saw last week. It's just amazing. Governor, I mentioned to you that I had a particular concern, and I do. It's not a new one, as you know, but I think I don't use this as a pulpit very often, but I'm very, very concerned about President Trump's decision to endanger the future and the lives of so many of our young people, hundreds of thousands, including those in Maryland and in our communities in Maryland. I think it's important for the state and the executive of the state to speak out, and I'm glad they're doing
that. I did that very strongly yesterday.
Yes, to reassure our neighbors and our people that we're not turning our backs on them. Innocent, hardworking people who came as kids, they're in Montgomery College, they're all over the state. And it's just wrong. It's just really bad. As you know, I've said here several times, we're seeing increasing incidents of hate in our schools and in our communities. Swastikas and nooses painted and hanging from trees. I think there always are better and lesser angels in our nature, and unfortunately the so-called leaders in Washington are, I think, bringing out the worst in us and sort of giving impunity for people to do what they want, and now spotting these young people and telling them to get ready to be deported, I think it's just un-American. It's wrong. And I stand with you and with the comptroller, and I'm sure with all the officials in our government, saying that we're not going to turn our backs on our kids, on our families. This is not partisan. It's not political. But what's happening is un-American, and it's wrong, and I think we all feel threatened by it. And when it's happening at the same time that there's such instability in the world, and now the president has said maybe we'll renege on our debt in order to build a wall separating us from all of the southern hemisphere. I'm proud to be a Maryland citizen, and I'm proud to stand with Maryland, and to know, as I mentioned earlier, Governor, that the First Lady is in Korea right now, representing you and us, we reach out. Maryland is a diverse state. We appreciate that. It's our strength, and I don't think we should ever let so-called leaders lead us astray. Thank you.
Thank you. Controller.
Thank you, Governor, and good morning, Madam Treasurer, and everyone here. I hope you all had an enjoyable and relaxing Labor Day holiday weekend. I know that families, students, teachers across our great state appreciated the extra time off to catch one last ball game at Camden Yards, and what a game that was last night. Make one last family trip to Deep Creek out in Western Maryland or Ocean City, and maybe attend the state fair. Enjoy some of the great amenities and activities Maryland has to offer before the unofficial end of summer and schools come back into session. And I know our hardworking small business owners, so many of whom depend on our summer tourism industry, from Baltimore City to Ocean City to Accident, Maryland. They all greatly benefited from the additional economic activity generated from the holiday weekend. Governor, again, I want to thank you for making school after Labor Day the law of the land, and I hope it will be for decades to come. Now, we have another subject before us today, which is $62.4, I believe, million dollars worth of cuts to the current fiscal year's budget. The tough choices we're asked to make today underscore the continued volatility in our economy, the uncertain fiscal climate that our state continues to experience. Last Friday, my office released the closeout numbers for fiscal year 2017, and while we ended the fiscal year with $90 million beyond our conservative revenue forecast, and while I'm obviously very pleased that we have more revenue funds than we'd planned for, we can't forget the fact that we continue to live in very uncertain economic times and that the dysfunction in Washington has the potential to impact Maryland more than almost any other state in the Union. When the General Assembly convenes in January, I hope the governor and the legislature will work together to close the $700 million-plus structural deficit that our state faces in fiscal year 2019. So, governors, we continue to face fiscal and economic uncertainties. It's my hope that everyone will continue to exercise fiscal restraint and budget the taxpayers' money in the most prudent way as you chart the course for our state's fiscal future. And I want to again underscore the fact that this is not something new. This is one of the very important functions of the board, to be able to make reductions in real time to stem the tide of what is obviously a situation where we're taking in less money than we're spending. The last administration that preceded us, I believe, cut almost $2 billion cumulatively at the Board of Public Works. And it was difficult. It was a hard exercise for me because I was literally just, here's the piece of paper, Mr. Comptroller, with all the cuts. And that is in complete contrast to what occurred over the last week or so with Secretary Brinkley and Mr. Nugent on the staff and Governor Hogan, and it was a collaborative approach, and I believe the result will stand the state in good stead, and I wanted to thank you personally for not just giving me something like a piece of paper shot across the desk, Governor. I believe it's what the public wants as far as governing. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you, Mr. Comptroller.
Could I just say that actually the proposal was posted for public examination last week, Thursday, as it should be, and I have to say that in accordance with the law, with a bill sponsored by a delegate from Montgomery County, Delegate Corman. And I think it really, people were a little concerned about making things public, but in fact, what happened, people saw it, they understood it, there were a couple of concerns, and those concerns were addressed, and I think we all appreciate that. I agree with the comptroller. I endorse very much what the comptroller said.
Well, thank you both very much. I think it has been a very collaborative process, and I want to thank Mark Nugent on our staff and Budget Secretary and his team, and both of you for we sat down, we discussed it, we made some adjustments, and I think it's something that we can all be proud of, the way the process works.
Now, Governor, let me say that some of us actually consulted in the prior administration.
Some of you
also
did.
Yeah.
Well, we didn't have that opportunity. But that leads us right into, I think what we're going to do is take up the budget items first, budget and management's agenda, and we'd like to discuss item 13, which I want to take up. So let's go ahead and get started with the BBM agenda, and then we can go back to our regular agenda after that. But for nearly a quarter century, the Board of Public Works has been vested with this important budgetary authority, and as the comptroller said, it's a normal occurrence. It's always happened. Today it's necessary for us to, again, exercise that authority. Even though in our very first budget that we submitted the day after I was sworn in, we eliminated a $5.1 billion structural deficit, which we inherited. But due to continued unsustainable spending, automatic spending increases, and huge debt service payments that will soon exceed what we spend on school construction, the state is again spending more than it takes in. While our revenue growth is fairly healthy at 3%, better than a lot of people in the country, we have an 8% rate of this forced increased spending, which continues to outpace what the revenues are. And to give you a sense of what that means, each percentage point in the difference between revenue and spending equals $170 million. So this gap between the revenues and the mandated spending increases is estimated to reach $750 million in the next fiscal year. That's why we have to take these budgetary actions today, in order to better position our finances for tomorrow. The legislature's chief fiscal officer, Warren Deschenaux, agrees with these actions. Although Warren is retiring in a few months, his call for the legislature to get real about unsustainable spending increases is a warning that must still be addressed. He also used, and I thought it was very appropriate, he used the analogy of Groundhog Day, because we keep reliving the same budgetary problems over and over again. And in order to get out of our fiscal predicament, it's pretty simple. We need to stop spending more than we take in. And that's been a top priority of our administration since day one. And we've repeatedly asked the legislature to work with us in a bipartisan manner to finally adopt a common sense budgeting process where spending does not automatically increase at a rate that continually outpaces revenue. And it's my hope that we can break this cycle so that we can stop reliving these Groundhog Days over and over again. With that, I'd like to turn the floor over to Secretary Brinkley so he can walk us through the Department of Budget and Management's recommended adjustments.
Governor, to be fair, could I just point out that the state as all of our investors know, ends the year with a balanced budget. We have to make cuts, and you may not like the cuts, we may not like the cuts, but Maryland does have a balanced budget. And in terms of the mandates, there obviously is a large portion of the budget that is mandated, but what's mandated is education, health care, and real services, and I think we have to talk not at a high level about mandates necessarily, but about the real services and programs for people that are going to be cut unless the wealthiest state in the nation decides to pay for them.
Well, we're going to let Secretary Brinkley talk about the real cuts
okay. In
detail.
Good morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller, and thank you for the opportunity to explain item 13S on Department of Budget Management's agenda. I also have staff here to address any specific questions, namely my Deputy Secretary, Mark Nicole, is here in the audience in the event we need to go there. Following the legislature's action on the current budget in April, DLS estimated a cash shortfall of nearly $750 million going into FY19. As the governor referenced, revenues are growing at a healthy average rate of 3.4%, but spending growth averages 5.6% per year, with FY19 expenditures are estimated to grow a whopping 8%. Legislative spending mandates are to blame for a good portion of this gap. In fact, $418 million of new mandates over the next 4 years were passed in the most recent 2017 session alone. This pattern of overspending is simply unsustainable. Governor, you have warned about and provided remedies to this predicament every year since taking office. The legislature's own lead budget analyst also agrees that the state cannot continue to spend more than it brings in. Governor, you referenced in your comments the item about the debt subsidy. And this one item in the general fund budget is the fastest growing item in our general budget. In FY 2013, it was zero. In FY 19, it is anticipated to exceed $400 million, which exceeds what we put into school construction spending by over 20%. So let me shift to the reduction summary. We are proposing reductions today to maintain a sufficient fund balance that will allow us to address required FY18 deficiencies and to provide a down payment on the FY19 cash shortfall. Our balancing actions total $79.9 million, $61 million in general fund budget reductions, $9.95 million in revenue actions, including a $9 million fund balance transfer from the University System of Maryland. There are $9 million in debt service savings that we are accounting for due to the refunding of existing refinanced bonds at the recent PPW meeting. Agency reductions range from as little as 0.1% to 2.5%. Most reductions are in the 1 to 2% range. The largest agency reduction is $22.2 million in the Maryland Department of Health. The largest single reduction in MDH is the result of decreased average length of stay in hospitals. This saves the state an estimated $10 million. MDH also expects to save $5 million from renegotiating certain large procurement renewals. We are using $5 million of excess balance in the Cigarette Restitution Fund to offset Medicaid costs. The University System of Maryland is reduced by $8 million. Reductions include facility renewal, administrative expenditures, and personnel-related expenditures. 30 vacant positions, I want to emphasize vacant positions, are being abolished at the University System of Maryland. Reductions of a similar proportion are made to Morgan State University, St. Mary's College of Maryland, and Baltimore City Community College. Within the executive branch, the administration is recognizing salary savings throughout several agencies from positions that have been vacant since the start of the current fiscal year. with the largest savings coming from public safety of $8.4 million and the Department of Human Services of $1.9 million. The Department of Human Services is reduced by $7.1 million total, $3.7 million due to a realignment of temporary cash assistance funding, again, to reflect our actual experiences, and $1.9 million in salary savings, as I referenced. $1.5 million through DHS is coming from information technology savings tied to the Maryland Think Project. Due to declines in the population served, there is a reduction of $4.5 million at the Department of Juvenile Services. And the increase in the Selinger program is being halved, leaving the program with a 4.5% increase for a total remaining subsidy of more than $48 million. To close, Governor and Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller, I'd like to reiterate that the ability for this body to make mid-year spending reductions when necessary is something that the bond rating agencies consistently highlight as one of our budgetary strengths. Although some have claimed that there is a lack of an immediate financial crisis or fiscal crisis facing Maryland, the reality is that such attitudes and beliefs betray a fundamental misunderstanding not only of sound budgeting principles, but also of the serious challenges this state faces in the next few years based on its current spending patterns. The proposed actions you have in front of you are a critical step, and not only in providing a down payment on the FY19 cash shortfall, but also in bringing us closer to achieving long-term fiscal stability in the state. And I ask for your support for these proposed reductions, as well as the rest of the DBM agenda.
Thank you, Secretary Brinkley. Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller, any questions?
Just to point out that this is not exactly what was posted. The cuts, in fact, are less than what was originally posted, including which items?
We had three items that were modified on it. But this was posted, Sheila, from
yes, originally posted. It's been posted online as of this morning at 9 a.m.
No, but the
right,
original posting that was transparent and caused some concern, in fact.
We took three items off of that. The disparity grant program, the $200,000 for the historic research, and $150,000 for the Humanity Council. Is that correct?
Yes.
Those three items were taken off.
Because of a better understanding of the impact of each one.
Yep. Very good. Yes. A motion? Second.
Yeah, let me just also add, I want to thank the governor and his staff for the fiscal responsibility that this action demonstrates. The treasurer mentioned all the uncertainty coming out of Washington. This having a conservative, cautious approach to the fiscal matters of the state is a line of defense for our taxpayers and for our families. And, Mr. Secretary, kudos to you and Governor. Very supportive of this. And, my hands are not clean from having been in the legislature. I was always jerry-rigging things and grabbing money and taking dollars and substituting debt, and it was like an annual event down there. And
thank God you've seen the light.
Yeah, no, thank God I'm not there anymore. But I think what the treasurer noted about what's occurring in Washington is added incentive for us to really tighten down and be very cautious in the state. Thank you.
Thank you very much. So
can I just add one thing, sure. Governor, I mentioned to you? The savings from reducing the days in the hospital, also, I think, another result was better health and better health care for people. And
it
should be noted. I thank you.
Well, thank you. There's been a motion and a second. The vote is 3-0. Thank you. Good job.
You want to do the rest of it? You want to...
Okay, Governor and Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller, we have 11 more items on the agenda. We had a withdrawal of... Which one did we withdraw?
Two and three.
Right. So maybe it's 10 items.
I'd like to, if I could, highlight item 14, which is a request from the Maryland 529 program. I don't know if anybody's here for that, but I just...
Excuse me, Governor, but Lauren Shipley, who's the executive director of the 529 program.
Lauren, good morning.
Good morning, Governor. Comptroller and Madam Treasurer, thank you.
I just want to highlight this. I don't really have a question. I think it's a wonderful program. And so item 14 is a request from the Maryland 529 program for program management services for the ABLE program, the Achieving a Better Life Experience. ABLE is an innovative program that we all created in 2016, which allows our fellow citizens with disabilities to save their own money and to plan for the future. Under the ABLE program, Marylanders with disabilities and their families can open savings accounts with the Maryland 529 program, allowing them to create assets and save money without jeopardizing their federal disability benefits. And this would not have been possible without your efforts and the disability community, along with the legislature, the comptroller's office, the treasurer's office, all working cooperatively with our administration. And the Maryland ABLE program, I believe, is a shining example of how by working together we can change Maryland for the better. So I just wanted to thank you for your efforts.
Thank you, Mr. Governor. It's definitely a group effort by a lot of people, especially a collaboration with the Department of Disabilities, and Secretary Beatty's here today and also a member of our 529 board.
Secretary Beatty, we got to give her a shout out too. Hello, Madam Secretary.
Governor, could I just put in case people don't know, the Maryland 529 program is also the college savings program, and this is a new partner for college savings. And as the chair of the board, let me say that we had a special committee working with Lauren that worked very hard on this, chaired by Secretary Beatty. And Comptroller, you'll be pleased to know that one of the driving members of that subcommittee was Mr. Andrew Friedson.
Excellent.
Who is a huge supporter and very enthusiastic supporter and has been from the beginning of the ABLE program, worked with the legislature, Suzanne Brogan, and your appointees to the board, Deanne Sovchek and Charles Tharp. And those are the people who really have driven this along with the community and the activists and the legislators. And it wouldn't have happened without the hard work of Lauren and her staff.
Thank you, Lauren.
Thank you.
Yep. Good. And the treasurer kindly mentioned Andrew Friedson, who's a former senior advisor to me as of yesterday, I think, because he's off running for office himself.
What is he running for?
I think for comptroller.
I think for the first comptroller.
But I wanted to salute our colleagues in the legislature. Craig Zucker was here earlier. He also happens to work with us in the off-season. State Senator who sponsored the bill that I believe was passed unanimously in the House and Senate. And I agree completely with the governor. It's bipartisan cooperation, which is, it's alive and well in Maryland, put it that way. And thank you for mentioning Mr. Friedson, and I wanted to give, I guess Senator Zucker left, but he deserves a good pat on the back for getting this bill through.
Thank you.
So, Governor, I was unclear.
Senator Feldman, also, they were a team.
Oh, okay.
I think I was unclear in the transition, just what you have before you, items 1 through 14. 2 and 3 have been withdrawn. 13 you have previously adopted.
Right. Any other questions on DDM?
Move approval.
Is there a second? Second. Vote is 3-0 on DDM. We're going to move on to back to the Secretary's agenda. Secretary.
Good morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. Thank you for your kind words, Governor. I have one little short story, if you'll indulge me.
Please.
A personal moment. I think Secretary Ree might like the story as well as you. That my father, Kathy McDonald, did receive many awards from the Korean government. And he was there in the 1950s in the Korean War. But my favorite award commendation he got from the Korean government was because he was the first naval officer who entered into a procurement contract for kimchi, to bring kimchi onto the destroyer.
Wow.
And Korea was so happy to finally have somebody who showed up, a naval officer who would come and engage and buy kimchi. So he awarded the first kimchi contract.
That's amazing.
There you go.
Yeah.
Okay,
that's
thank you.
Amazing story.
Yeah.
Just to follow up on that, I want you to know that I am the first governor in America to have a kimchi refrigerator.
That's I knew that we had this connection. Okay, but on for that business, we have 9 items on the Secretary's agenda. We have 10 emergency reports. We are withdrawing Appendix 1, the first emergency report. Appendix 2 was a numbering error. So in actuality, where you're presenting to the Board of Public Works this morning, 9 reports numbered A3 through A11. We are happy to answer your
questions. Is there a motion?
I just had a question about item 5.
Item 5 is the Department of Housing and Community Development. And it's John Mandeville. Yes, I did see Mr. Mandeville here. It is a loan, general obligation bond proceeds.
John Mandeville, the Department of Housing and Community Development. Good morning, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller, Mr. Governor. Item 5 is a $1.357 million loan through the Neighborhood Business Works Program to support the renovation of the historic Hamilton Hotel in downtown Hagerstown. The project total cost is about $5.5 million. These funds will be used to renovate this existing vacant historic building and turn it into 38 apartment units and 6 retail units. Happy to answer any questions you may
have. Yeah, and I was just up in Hagerstown because we opened up a new branch office location, and I announced that we were going to put a remote call center right in downtown Hagerstown. I think it's a wonderful city and love to support the ongoing efforts to grow Hagerstown economy. And so I'm supportive of this loan, obviously, but I did want to ask a question because apparently the developer that the loan is going to has attempted to get the project underway in the past and I believe received historic tax credits for this project, but they were unable to claim them.
Right.
Have you, since this is such a top priority for the city, I just wanted to make sure that you've gotten assurances from the developer that we're not going to run into that kind of delay again.
Yeah, I certainly hope that doesn't happen again. The backstory here is the developer previously did receive an allocation of historic tax credits from the Maryland Historical Trust. They were unable to get the project underway. I attribute the fact that they couldn't get it underway, despite the fact that we weren't involved in that time, to 3 different factors, one being the economy for small real estate developers. Small-scale real estate developers several years ago was very difficult. Capital was very hard to come by. It was tough to put deals together. And this is not, since this is a small business and it's eligible for this program that we operate, they're not the kind of developer that had an incredibly deep balance sheet. So, you know, it was tough for them at that time. Secondly, the realities of the marketplace have changed a lot in the last few years. Rents have stabilized. The economy has gotten a little bit better in Hagerstown, so it's a more receptive time to be doing a transaction. And third, and I hope most significantly, we're able, through the Department of Housing's Neighborhood Business Works Program, to provide the kind of flexible capital that needs to be put into a deal like this to get it off the ground. And I'll also give some credit to the developer. They have managed to realign their finances somewhat to put some significant equity into the deal to make it financially feasible. So I certainly don't hope we run into any delays. Our team's been working very hard to get it ready to move forward, and we hope that they'll close on their loan before the end of the year.
Thank you for that excellent answer.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there a motion on the Secretary's agenda?
Move approval.
3-0 on the Secretary's agenda. We're going to move on to DNR.
Good morning, Governor, Mr. Comptroller, Madam Treasurer. For the record, I'm Mark Belton, Secretary of the Maryland Department of Natural Resources, and we have 8 items on our agenda for your approval this morning.
Any questions on DNR?
Motion. Move approval.
Second. 3-0. We're going to move on to the university system.
Good morning. Joe Evans, representing the University System of Maryland. We have five items on the agenda. In attendance, I have the president of the University of Baltimore, Kurt Smoke. We're here to answer any questions.
We'd like to welcome President Smoke. Thank you for being here with us this morning. I don't have any questions, but I want to bring up phase two of the new coal fieldhouse project. Last week, I had the pleasure of touring the facility, and it's pretty incredible what President Lowe and the athletic department have done with that facility and built a great future for the athletic program on the site of such a historic site as Cole Fieldhouse. And I got to tell you, Coach Durkin invited me to come give a little pep talk to the team before the game against Texas.
Yes, it worked.
And, you know, they were supposed to lose by 3 touchdowns, and they put 51 points on the number 23 team. First time in 10 years they beat a ranked team, and it was a heck of a way to start the season. So now Coach Durkin wants me to come every week for a pep talk. But I think this is a tremendous tremendous program. The great phase two of this, I think, is going to make it even better. So we were happy to get the tour last week. I don't have any other questions or comments. Anybody else on the
– Yeah, no, I hope the governor heads up to Camden Yards and speaks to the O's, too. But
I did speak to the Ravens.
Yeah. I just wanted to ask about the increase in the cost. It's gone from 147.4 to 195.7 million from the previous time we saw this, I think 2 years ago. Can you help us understand that?
Yeah, I'd like to bring up Bill Olin, who is the executive director for design and construction for the service center at College Park. Answer your question.
Good morning, Governor, board members. To answer your question, Comptroller Francho, last fall when the Senate bill came into act to have the campuses work closer together, the leaders at the two campuses, College Park and Baltimore, took another look at the research that was going to be done in the building. Originally, it was going to be public health with orthopedics, focus on orthopedics. The orthopedic clinic is still going in. It's grown a little from 6 exam rooms to 10, so that's one of it, to bring in more patients, to be able to see more patients. Type of patients that will be seen, public servants, veterans from the armed forces. They've reached out to Walter Reed and Bethesda to talk about collaboration there. The university's Veterans Center is right adjacent to this space. So that was one component that grew. The other component, the research side of it, the focus from public health to traumatic brain injury. There's a lot of press recently in the last year or so about injuries to professional football players, to others. There's little known about that. There's little research that's been done to date. So there was an intent to refocus the research program, the academic program, on TBI. The listening to the researchers, and I'm not going to do it justice, what they believe they are finding is folks that have had multiple concussions, more than one concussion, whether it's a firefighter that's fallen off a ladder, whether it's a family member that's been in car accidents, a veteran overseas with a bomb blast, the brain does not go back to its original form and function after the second concussion. So whether it's an athlete, so the center has been, there's been a lot of focus. The design is not done on that because it's a new research center. It'll be one of maybe two in the country that have the athletic folks close to the research center along with the veteran center right there. So, you know, one of a kind. The type of research, they found that folks with multiple concussions, one of the things they find is sleep patterns change. Their ability to work out, their ability to be mobile, and then their eating patterns change, so people may gain weight. So that's been a big focus. Outside the research area, there's been more emphasis on the Academy for Innovation and Entrepreneurship, you know, collaboration for students working on projects with industry leaders, business partners. And then we added on the athletic side, we added two pieces, which are part of the scope and the cost increase. added and increased the size of the dining nutrition facility to include all the sports teams, just not football. So that's on the top floor of the building. The intent is that any of the sports teams, any of the athletes can be together. So the athletic director or the president will like more collaboration between the teams. The last piece is we did add a tunnel, a pathway for the players to leave the facility, Cole facility, and enter the stadium, sort of a grand entrance, and then a way for them to leave, and then a halftime, more suitable location for them to have halftime discussions between the coaches. So those are the major components.
And how is the system proposing to pay for the extra $50 million in?
The funding plan has remained the same with the exception of the additional funds. The majority of the money on this project, over $90 million, is coming from donors. I haven't gotten an update this week, but as of mid to end of July, we were two-thirds of the way there. That the folks doing that continue to raise money. Big Ten TV revenues. This last weekend, as the governor said, helped us with TV revenues, and then institutional funds.
Okay. Thank you, Governor.
Thank you. Any other questions on the university system agenda? Is there a motion?
Move approval.
Second. 3-0.
Thank you,
Joe. We're going to move on to information technology.
Good morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, and Mr. Comptroller. For the record, I'm Mike Leahy, Acting Secretary of the Department of Information Technology. Today we have one item on the agenda, and there are agency representatives available to answer any questions.
Any questions on information technology? Is there a motion?
Okay. I have a question. Oh, yes. Okay, this is one of my favorite areas of interest. Item 13.
Sorry about that, guys. Dave,
okay.
We got to finish up the technology.
Move approval.
3-0 on information technology. Now, Secretary Ron, better get ready.
Yeah.
The comptroller's got a tough question for you. I'd like to just highlight items 15 through 18. These are requests from the Maryland Transit Administration to acquire properties for the Purple Line project. And I just wanted to say that over a year ago, the Board of Public Works gave the state's final approval to the Purple Line, and I was really pleased last week to have the groundbreaking and to get the construction actually started. And I had the opportunity to thank all of our local, federal, and private sector partners for their support and cooperation. And as we approve these key property acquisitions, I just want to thank both of my colleagues on the Board of Public Works, Mr. Comptroller, Madam Treasurer. Thank you both. Both of you have been strong advocates for the Purple Line, and without your support, we could not have moved forward on this transformational project, which I think will act as an economic driver for the state of Maryland and for the National Capital Region. With that, Mr. Comptroller, we can go on to your...
Governor, since you opened up the subject of the Purple Line, first of all, I do congratulate people for getting it down the field. I think it will be a significant benefit to the economy and to the people. I must say I don't understand, and I look forward to getting a briefing from you, Mr. Secretary, why our trail has to be closed for 5 years when my understanding was the building is starting in Prince George's and moving west. And I'm also concerned about what is being done to assure that no more of our trees are taken down than necessary. I know a lot of this falls under the county and not the state, not MTA, but we look to you to monitor it all. And to reply. I know the county councilmen have raised issues or questions about it, although they do support it. And I just hope there'll be more discussion. And you never please everybody, but many years ago, Delegate Marsha Perry and I sponsored the Rails to Trails in Maryland bill. And we knew that the land was being preserved so that it could be used for transportation again in the future. But I hope we can have a community in which the trail, which is used all the time. I mean, it's tremendously popular, tremendously overused trail, actually. That working with the county, we can continue to have a great rail system and a great trail system. And I look forward to your leadership.
Madam Treasurer, the issue with the trail being shut down for the period of time of construction of the rail line for Purple Line is that while the groundbreaking was in Prince George's, construction actually will be occurring across the entire 16 miles of the project. And so the trail has to be closed as the staging area for the work on the rail and the facilities to support that. And so when we are through, the trail itself will actually be an improved trail for the public's usage. We believe it will be better than it is today, but that space is needed for the construction of the project.
I don't want to take up people's times here, but there are ways to reach out to the community. There are ways to keep people briefed. You never have 100% support, but I think it really would benefit everybody now that we're going to go together.
It's a good idea, Mr. Secretary, if you would come back and give a briefing, not only to the treasurer and the comptroller and I, but I think reaching out to the public to make them more aware of all the issues involved, because I'm not sure everybody knows how we are going to protect trees and make a better trail and why it's needed.
We're not cutting any trees that we do not have to. We know that that's a sensitive issue, but there will be trees that have to be taken down.
And that's been said from the beginning.
Right.
You can cut all the trees you want as far as the Purple Line goes, because this is a game changer for our area. I am facetious. I know the treasurer wants those trees to be saved.
No more than absolutely
the gentleman from Tacoma
Park. You want me to
cut all the trees down.
You have an extra power, so I'll let me know. We're on our way. But, Governor, thank you for giving a pat on the back to the treasurer and me and all the legislators who have been so supportive of this. But seriously, I was stunned that you were able to go to Washington and come back with $900 million in federal funding. That was just an absolute persuasive powers you used in Washington. Please bottle them. I'd like to buy some, because that was a I don't mean to act surprised, but I was stunned at the success, and kudos to you. I did have a quick question about the difference between what we're paying for these four properties and what the appraised prices are. Why don't we just use eminent domain for these properties if people are going to hold us up on them?
It depends. We do not have quick take authority under MTA, and where we do have quick take authority for SHA. Mm-hmm. So, to the extent that
why
we.
Is that?
Pardon me?
Why is that, I wonder?
State law. We would love. Of course, MTA does not get involved in this very quickly, very often, I should say. So, what happens is that we can be put in a position where, under quick take, we can condemn it. We can actually take the property, start construction, put money in escrow, and then the courts will decide what the cost is. Under the MTA process, we would have to go through the full condemnation cycle before we have access to the property. And so there are determinations made as to whether the cost of paying above appraisal is worth it to us, and we are only doing that with critical pieces of property. If there's a way for us to get around, if we have owners who believe their property is worth excessively more than what we think it is, if we have a way to deal with it other than taking it, then we do. But so in this case, we don't have quick take authority, and the only option for us is to go through a multiple year process, or we reach agreement with the property owner.
Any other questions on any MDOT?
Yes, I had item 13, if I could.
I wonder. Item 13.
Is that okay?
I think 13 is fine.
So I wonder if I could get Catherine O'Donnell, I see her sitting in the audience, to come up and explain exactly what we're doing here. And Catherine, if you could introduce yourself.
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Comptroller, Governor, Madam Treasurer. My name is Catherine O'Donnell. I'm Vice President and General Counsel for the Maryland and Delaware Railroad Company. And we are honored to be here today for our contract renewal, which is item 13. So if you have any questions in particular, Mr. Comptroller, or anyone else, I'd be happy to answer them.
Well, I'd just like to be on record supporting the project because I think it will help the economic activity on the shore. I know the governor's supportive of this project, and I think that it's well deserving of a state partnership. So, Mr. Secretary, thank you for keeping an eye on it and moving the project along. I think we're going to see good-paying jobs come out of it, and I think the tourism industry, which is so important on the shore, will benefit.
Thank you. We're very grateful for your support. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for your efforts.
Thank you.
Yep. Mr. Secretary, I didn't mean to preempt you there, but...
Absolutely not.
Before we leave mass transit, could I just say for the record that I trust reports have been exaggerated and extreme, and it's not the position of the administration not to put any more money into Metro. The Purple Line is great, but if we don't have Metro Red Line and Green Line in Montgomery and Prince George's, our economy will suffer very, very significantly. It's a major commuter service now for our citizens going in town and for the folks in Prince George's also. I understand that we have to make everybody come to the table and do the best we can for the citizens of Maryland, but I think that the thought that we're not going to put any more money into Metro, which is what some people are thinking, is...
It's not really accurate. I mean, we said we didn't want to put good money into the program until they solve some of the problems. And we're working on safety. We passed that through the legislature last time. We're trying to fix some of the kind of historic problems in running that system. But there is a difference of opinion as to how we come up with the additional funding. And it appears as if the chairman of the account of the WMATA board and the mayor of D.C. want $15 billion in tax increases, and we're not really interested in doing that, neither is Virginia. We're asking for more federal funding and trying to look at other alternatives.
So I'm sure things will be worked out, but I don't want people...
Pretty sure that's not a very popular thing to do in Maryland or Virginia, so it's not going to probably happen.
And besides, you donated Mr. Wiedefeld to...
he's doing a good job.
Governor, good morning, and may I, for the record, say that I'm Pete Ron, representing the Maryland Department of Transportation, and we have 18 items before you.
Oh, we already went through the whole
But I wanted to take this opportunity to say, based on the comments of the treasurer and the comptroller, is that had it not been for the governor, the Purple Line would not be underway. It took a call directly to the U.S. Secretary of Transportation. That call was made on Friday.
It wasn't really a call. It was a face-to-face. They had to twist arms. You can't do that over the phone.
The contact was made on Friday, and Sunday we received staff reports back that we would get the...
There was a little delay in the process that we had to work on.
Yeah. So it would not have happened without the governor's contact to Secretary Chao. And otherwise, we'd still be...
I want to give Secretary Chao a lot of credit because she recognized the importance of it and helped us push it through. I mean, it was certainly a thank you. It took a lot of people for a lot of years to make it happen. Any other questions on transportation?
Move approval.
Move approval. Second?
Second.
3-0, Mr. Secretary. Stuck by on that one. Now we're going to move on to our final victim. It's the Department of General Services.
Good morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. For the record, I'm Nelson Reichert, Deputy Secretary of General Services. The department has 29 items on the agenda, including 2 supplementals. We'll be glad to answer any questions that you might have.
Any questions on DGS?
Move approval.
Second. 3-0. Great job. Thank you
all
very much.
All right, Governor.
Board is adjourned.
Yeah. I guess back.